on me, as if she'd purposely meant to provoke me, so that the Delvers would. "We hear and hurt," the Delvers said. "But we can extinguish the noises on our own."
"Can you?" Winzik said. "My, my. It seems that when you come to our realm, you are confused. You are as unskilled with this place as we are when in yours. You attacked Detritus and Starsite, yet failed to kill even a single Cytonic. Many years have passed, and you have failed each time. We multiply. The noise multiplies. I will stop it, if you help me."
They hated this idea. I could feel their hatred, but also their agreement. "We accept your deal, Noise," the Delver said. "We will do as you instruct, in exchange for you stopping the ones that torment us."
"Excellent," Winzik sent. "So very, very wise of you."
I felt their deal snap into place. The Delvers would work for Winzik. I realized what had happened just as I slid into true unconsciousness. And as a result, nightmares haunted me the entire time I slept. Part 4. Chapter 27. Roughly 12 hours later, I flew on a direct course toward the arena, anxious for my duel, and holding a book in my hand. The arena was a location in the Jolly Rogers territory. Peg said the anomalies near it made the fighting more interesting. They'd be waiting there for us with the other pirate factions who would come to watch. Indeed, we'd brought the entire Broadsiders faction, ground crews flying double or in shuttles. Chet was flying with Naluba today in a non-combat tug that had comfortable seats. I still felt a sense of dread from what I'd experienced the night before. The deal had been made. The Delvers would work with Winzik. I needed to find answers, and quickly. Fortunately, I seemed to be on the best path for that. Win this duel, help Peg take Shorehold. Unfortunately, the trip to the arena would take a few hours. When I'd complained in the hangar about the flying time, Maxime had tossed me the book. A real book, made of paper and everything. I hadn't been intending to read it, but as the flight stretched long, and I let Embot take over steering for a little while, I found myself poking into it as a distraction. It was slow reading, as I had to use my translation pin with its optics on to read the sentences to me in English. At the same time, it was fascinating. Not only was physical media like this almost non-existent on my planet, information from our old ship archives was fragmented. The biggest chunk that had survived until my time was about the plants and animals of old Earth, so my schooling had covered that in detail. But I'd never heard of a trashy romance novel, as Maxime had named this one. It was written from the perspective of the Cambrian species, who had a lot of tentacles and stuff. Their courtship rituals were surprisingly similar to human ones, if way, way more sappy. Or maybe that was the genre. I didn't really care about the plot. I was more intrigued by this book's nature. It was just so fluffy. The protagonist spent her time romancing three different guys, and her most urgent question was deciding which one to bring with her on vacation. Like, that was the entire conflict. Not the quest to win this vacation, but the stress of choosing between the guys. This was what they read, what they enjoyed in the superiority. It contained no fighting. I wasn't so ignorant as to think everything had to involve battle. There were plenty of great stories about heroes like Clever Coyote escaping trouble using his wits instead of his brawn. There were even stories about people building up to a war, then making peace. Gran-Gran hadn't ever told me a story about people taking a vacation. Part of me thought it was ridiculous, but another part understood. It whispered, this is what people can focus their attention on if they aren't constantly at war. You learned something living among them. Your life is not normal. This aspect of the characters made them so much more alien than the tentacles. I wanted peace for my people, yes. But to imagine a world without flight training, without the military complex being society's central and most demanding need, scud. I couldn't understand it, but I needed to. So I read their romance novel and tried to comprehend. We flew for some time, and I dug a good quarter of the way through the book when Embot spoke. "You see that fragment?" I glanced out of the canopy. We had to move slowly for the benefit of the tugs, so we made a leisurely pace through the belt, passing fragments with a variety of terrain. One down below was a rare ocean fragment, not the one we'd traversed earlier, but similar. "I feel something seeing that one," Embot said. "I remembered sailing with you and Chet, and it felt pleasant, like I was meeting an old friend. Is it strange to feel this now? It's not even the same fragment." "It's not strange," I said. "Humans often associate feelings with locations. The caverns beneath Detritus sometimes feel more like home to me than the neighborhood where I grew up. And each time I see a cave, I think of them." "This feeling is nice," Embot said. "Not going to ask this time what the emotions are for?" "I'm still wondering that," he said. "But today I just like these feelings." "That's all right, isn't it?" I smiled. "Yes." "I used to try to imagine why you liked stories so much," Embot said. "At first, I thought it was a purely logical response. Education through the story as a mnemonic device. Yet your strange reactions baffled me. You didn't treat them as mere education, but as something more." "I think I understand now. Hearing those stories, being with your grandmother, felt good. And thinking of them again, well, you remember her voice, don't you? That's like me seeing that fragment and remembering the fun of sailing. It's warm to me. A machine shouldn't be able to feel warm, but I do." I shifted in my seat, trying to remember Gran-Gran's voice as he said. And I couldn't. I remembered the stories, but her voice was lost to me. Needing to be distracted, I turned back to my book, and we flew for more time. I'll admit, I kind of liked the book. I didn't find it trashy at all. Indeed, I actually found myself engaged, almost excited to find out who got to go on the vacation. Granted, it helped to imagine the heroine was planning to feed the failed suitors to her pet shark. It would have been easier if Embot hadn't piped up with some observation or another every 5 minutes. "Hey, Spensa, that fragment is black and purple, with crystals growing in the ground. I think it comes from a planet like where Shiver lived. What do you think?" "Don't know, Embot," I said, turning the page. "Why don't you scan your databases to find out?" "Done," he said. "I think it does." "Great," I said. "Maybe you should catalog the fragments we've passed and see if you can discover what kind of planets they came from." "Will do," he said. That should take him a while. I smiled fondly, but saints, this must be what it was like to have a toddler. I probably owed my mother a nice rat sandwich or something, because I'm pretty sure I'd had lots of questions for her, often about how to perform a decapitation. "Hey," Embot said after a few more minutes of silence. "Why am I doing this scan again? Is this busy work, Spensa?" I smiled. "Made you look." "You humans," he said. "That is not a joke. There's no punchline." "Oh, hush," I said. "This part is good." "I guess you don't want to hear about Peg's secret communication then," he said. I glanced up. "Secret communication?" "She's receiving an encrypted direct call, I assume from a pirate in the Jolly Rogers, judging by the origin of the data burst. Peg obviously doesn't want anyone to know about the call. It came in on a band that the other broadsider receivers aren't attuned to pick up. Her ship apparently has some special equipment. I can only see because of, you know."
espionage AI, mushroom locating AI, with supplementary espionage additions. A secret call. That was odd. Peg tended to be very open about everything she did. She always let the broadsiders listen in on the negotiations she made, for example. "Can we eavesdrop?" I asked. "If I had my old ship's hardware, that would be easy," he said. "But I can't manage it from this ship. Best I can do is tell you the length of the conversation and maybe pinpoint the person Peg is talking to." "Okay," I said, a little frustrated. I almost wished he hadn't said anything at all, rather than teasing me. I was distracted enough that it was hard to get through the rest of the book. I put it down, about halfway done, as long-range sensors showed that we were coming up on a large gathering of starfighters. "She just ended the call," Embot said, "but I'm certain which ship it came from. The starfighter that belongs to her son, Grem." So Peg had an extended secret call with her supposedly estranged son, I said, leader of a rival pirate faction. "Something about all this doesn't add up, Embot. What kind of game is she playing?" "I couldn't possibly guess," Embot said. "I barely understand myself these days, let alone you organics." The arena turned out to be a large, open-air region of the belt, populated by building-size floating chunks of rock. The most of the fragments were on the same plane. Here in this pocket, the landscape was more uneven. It seemed like a fragment might have shattered, its pieces coming to rest at different elevations. Well, I'd trained as a pilot in debris showers. I could handle this. However, a more distinctive feature of this region was the patches of strange, glowing white light amid the chunks of rock. They were like mini light bursts, but weren't much larger than my ship. Actually, they reminded me of the little white hole I'd seen in the vision, the one that had eventually become a fragment. Those holes made me uncomfortable. The others had told me about them, but still, those were patches of pure nowhere, somehow breaking through into the belt. And I was going to have to fly among them. Chapter 28. A ragtag bunch of 100 different starfighters were arrayed around the arena. Markings on the wings or fuselages identified their factions. No other theme unified them, except perhaps for a sense of ramshackle piecemealness. Several had obviously had their cockpits expanded to make room for a larger species. Others were bulky shuttles or other industrial craft, but with an amusing number of weapons strapped to them, like the super gun I'd made as a little girl by taping 6 toys together. There were also many with dangerous designs, sleek military vessels with integrated weapons and large boosters. I picked out Grem, the champion. His ominous starfighter was shaped like a wicked crescent moon, pointed ends facing my direction. It was larger than a DDF Poco, but made up for it with enormous boosters and a deadly armament. Now that I had time to study it carefully, I counted 5 destructors on the thing. "Peg!" a voice said over the line, my ship translating. It was a low, growling voice and spoke the same language Peg did.
"Took your sweet time, as always." "I like to enjoy myself, Grem," Peg said back, "and the simple things give me pleasure. Like being slow. Like knowing I've made you wait," Peg said with a laugh. "You ready to be on with this?" "I would be," Grem said. "Except I'm not champion anymore."
"What?"
Peg demanded.
"I lost the title," Grem explained, "earlier today. The cannonators arrived early, and I thought we'd do some dueling while we waited, but I lost."
"Fool child," Peg said. "You grow hemels this day."
I followed this exchange with a frown. Growing hemels, I was pretty sure, was their way of saying someone was stupid. There was something theatrical about the exchange.
Grem and Peg had spent a half hour talking in secret. She plainly already knew about him losing the championship, but now she had to pretend she didn't know. Why?
Well, who is the champion? Peg said. We'll fight them instead. Cannonade newcomer, Grem said.
Peg growled softly. Curious, I opened a direct line to Maxime. I think I know the Cannonade faction. They've got a Heklo leader?
Yeah,
he replied.
Vlep. They are malcontents.
We're pirates, Maxime. We're all malcontents.
Cannonaders are worse, he explained. The other factions can be trusted not to be too brutal. But if the Cannonade faction has the champion, I don't know. I'd refuse to fight if I were you.
Well, I wasn't going to do that. In fact, I was happy for a chance to strike back at Vlep and his cronies for robbing me. But there was also something very suspicious about all of this. What game are you playing, Peg? I wondered. Another voice came on the broad channel, snappish and vaguely familiar.
We'll fight your pilot, Peg, Vlep said. My champion is better than any of you. He calls himself Dark Shadow.
Dark Shadow. That was such an awesome call sign.
Ha! Peg said. Dark Shadow! Really, Vlep? Well, hope his skill is equal to his flair for the dramatic, because we have someone special.
They're going to lose, Vlep said, just like your kid did. I don't know what you two are playing at, but I don't trust you, Peg. Any of you.
So nothing's new, Vlep.
You sure that newcomer of yours doesn't want to swap to join us? Vlep asked. The Cannonade faction is the only one that doesn't secretly bow to you and your spawn.
I don't think I'll be doing that, Vlep,
I said over the line, pitching my voice to be as ominous as possible.
All things considered. Em, I supposed to know what that meant? He asked back.
Scud, he didn't recognize my voice. So much for my cool reveal.
I'm the human woman you tried to kidnap in the forest, I said.
I'm actually a super great pilot, and I'm here to embarrass you for what you did to me.
Yeah, sure, whatever, he said. Dark Shadow, let's humiliate another faction. Duel until lockup. Losing group forfeits their ship to the winner.
That was high stakes for this lot. Ships were rare enough in here that they weren't wagered except in extreme circumstances. If I lost, Mbot would upload to the drone, which we'd brought along, so that shouldn't be a problem. But there was a more important issue at stake. And it involved the delicate game Peg was playing behind the scenes. At Peg's urging, I inched my ship forward out of the line of broadsiders. I kept my eyes on the most dangerous ships, wondering which would be the champion. So I almost missed it when a relatively small ship soared forward. It was probably around a third of the size of my ship, with a core fuselage so narrow that the destructors on the wings looked enormous by comparison. I realized I'd made a silly mistake. Bigger didn't mean more dangerous. I should know that better than most. This ship reminded me of the Krell drones, and they'd been plenty deadly. And while a majority of intelligent species seemed to be roughly human size, there were obvious exceptions. I eyed the ship, suspicious. A newcomer, good enough to beat Grem, the longtime champion? Who was this? A figment, perhaps? That would make sense. A figment pilot would explain the small size. The ship wouldn't need a cockpit.
Arena boundaries are being uploaded to your proximity display, Spin, Peg said over the comm.
Mbot helpfully outlined the area, which was in the shape of a tall column or tube. It stretched thousands of feet upward and downward, but was a fraction of that in diameter. That would make for a narrow fighting area, like having a duel in a tunnel or in a shaft stretching up toward the sky. What happens if I go out of bounds? I said on a private line, realizing I'd never asked. Do I lose?
Nah, Peg said. What's the fun in that? If you go out of bounds, everyone else can shoot at you. So I'd advise against it. unless you're growing too many mulins. You ready?
I took a deep breath. I know there's something about this you aren't telling me, Peg. She remained quiet. I'll still do it, I said. But at least tell me one thing. Do you genuinely need me to win this? Or is the championship about some kind of political posturing?
I need this spin, Peg said, her voice growing softer. I really need this. This is our chance at uniting the factions. There are details I haven't told you, but that part is legitimate. I have put, one might say, all of my fruit into your cart. Please don't drive it off a cliff.
All right, I said. Let's do this. My screen flashed green, and I hit the overburn, boosting into the arena proper. Chapter 29. The champion didn't fire on me immediately. He zipped in close, then veered away, clearly expecting me to tail him. A test. He wanted to judge my skill. I decided not to bite, instead turning upward and flying along the perimeter of the arena.
I find no matches for that starfighter design in my database,
Embot said. Alas, I have only a basic list of superiority ships, and this seems an advanced model. It might not even be superiority, I said. Chet thinks that occasionally other ships end up in here via hyperjump accidents. I swooped upward, then turned back around. I didn't miss that several other ships kept pace with me outside the arena barrier, pirates eager for the chance to take pot shots if I drifted out of bounds. All right. I had a feel for the shaft-like shape of the arena now, but I was still at a disadvantage as I'd never flown in here before, while the champion had done it at least once. I performed a quick weave between several of the floating chunks, then eyed one of the strange glowing white patches. The proximity sensor blared an alert that indicated the champion was heading for me. Dark Shadow had realized that I was acclimating to the terrain, and so he would need to make the first move, lest he give me time to adjust. I slammed on my overburn, dodging out of the way as the champion tried to tail me. I soon had to cut the overburn. Going too fast while dodging wasn't always the best idea, depending on reaction speed and turning capability. Instead, I zoomed down along the curved perimeter, shooting through the shaft at its edge, hoping the champion would slip out of bounds. Unfortunately, Dark Shadow proved competent at avoiding that. Indeed, that straightaway only earned me a few shots from behind, which were hard to evade without going out of bounds. Best to stay to the center of the arena. I pulled up and went soaring in that direction, weaving between floating chunks. The champion stuck with me. He was good. And he proved to have a light lance himself, which he used in pivots. That was strange. I had yet to meet a non-human from the superiority who used a light lance the way we did in the DDF. Fortunately, over the next few minutes of leading him through a chase, I decided I was probably the better pilot. I just had to. I felt something. Something like fingers on my brain. I was a lonely rock in the darkness. A mist reached around me, embracing me, smothering me. A pair of burning white eyes appeared, reflected in the canopy of my starship, eyes that fixated upon me. We see you. I was thrown back into the conflict as a destructor blast crackled across my shield. Scud! I twisted to the left and dropped in a weaving spin between two floating asteroids, effectively dodging further shots. Spencer, Embot asked, what's wrong? I searched the scanner. Yeah, I'd drifted close to a white patch. The Delvers are watching. Can you get me a scanner analysis of those white patches?
Working, Embot said.
Destructor fire chased me again. I spotted a series of asteroids floating nearby, then slammed my overburn and shot toward them. The champion followed. I speared the second asteroid I passed with my light lance, but didn't merely use it to turn. I spun all the way around it, employing the small asteroid as a counterweight. That hurled the chunk of rock backward, making it collide with the next asteroid in line, which the champion had just speared to use in a turn. The collision threw off his maneuver, making him break out of the turn and shoot away erratically. After a quick release, I stabbed a third rock and used it to pivot around behind the champion. As he reoriented, he found me on his tail, firing. I scored a hit, his shield crackling. To Dark Shadow's credit, he didn't panic, but he did go into evasives. And scud. I knew that set of maneuvers. I searched my memory, full of people I was, alarmingly, beginning to forget. My training was still relatively clear, and the champion was performing an exact set of maneuvers taught by the DDF. Before I could follow that thought, my mind fuzzed again.
We've found you, Noise. You should not be here. You should not be here.
Burning eyes in my canopy, multiplying, more and more sets that,
Spensa!
Embot shouted. I veered out of the way, narrowly avoiding a collision with an asteroid. That was really inconvenient.
More Delvers? He asked.
Yeah, they're not happy. Scud, the champion was on my tail again.
Spin,
Peg said over the comm.
Remember to watch those white spots. If you get too close, you'll risk some of the distortions that happen in no man's land.
Trying, I said. Little harder than it looks. I performed another series of light lance moves, mostly to keep asteroids between me and the champion. Fortunately, he strayed too close to a white spot himself, and he reacted as I had, stalling, distracted. I could use that. Get an advantage, maybe? The champion pulled out of his diversion and stayed on me for the next bit. So, when I spotted two of the white spots floating near one another, I decided to do something brash. I took a sudden veer right between them. This one's on purpose, I said to Embot. Keep us from crashing if something goes wrong with me.
Okay, he said. I have your analysis, though. There's matter in the center of those, but it has a strange spectroscopy to it, unlike anything in my scientific databases. I think they might be a kind of rock, like acclivity stone, but charged a different way. So, be careful.
I darted between the white patches.
Leave this place, Noise.
I will leave, I said, if you promise never to enter where I am from. You will stay in the nowhere, and I will stay in the somewhere.
No, because the noise will not stop. Can you stop the noise, Noise?
I can't promise that, I said, but we aren't a threat to you. You can live, and we can live, and ignore one another.
No, you can stop, or you can be made to stop. You pain us. You give us the pain of another self.
We came shooting out from between the two white spots, and the ship flew by itself, veering to the side, out of range and away from some asteroids.
It's working, Embot said. I'm actually helping.
I grinned, taking back the controls. Embot wasn't a great pilot, but he could react when close to the white spots, which had hopefully given us an edge. Indeed, I checked the proximity sensor and saw that Dark Shadow had decided to follow me, but had been forced to slow first to not risk slamming into something after losing control. That meant I was able to execute a tight loop and come in shooting before the champion was able to get back up to speed and escape. Two more hits took his shield down. He dodged away, but I fell on his tail. One more shot, and I'd win this. I got in close as Dark Shadow dodged into some rubble, then lined up for the shot. But in that instant, Dark Shadow blasted his IMP. The wave of close-range energy knocked out my own shield. He darted away on a massive overburn before I could land the shot.
Not bad, Embot said. That champion is good.
Yeah, strangely so. When Dark Shadow got away from me, he used what seemed like a DDF scatter escape, very similar to the series of maneuvers I'd taught the broadsiders. I couldn't be absolutely certain, but something about the way he flew was familiar. Who was this? Did he really have the same training that I'd been given? Was it? I felt a sudden cold feeling, mixed with longing. Could it be him? I'd felt him in here when questing outward. Or was that just wishful thinking? Don't be stupid, the rational part of my brain said. Your father couldn't fit in that small cockpit. In fact, of all the races you know, it could only fit a Figment or a... Oh, Scud. Embot, can you get a comm line to that champion?
Of course, he said.
He flashed the light on the instrument panel that let me know the line was open. Hey, Dark Shadow, I said to the other ship, which was hugging the perimeter and flying upward. Any last words before I defeat you?
I am a swift minnow upon the tides of time, the response came. They may crush ships against the shore, but I swim them easily.
Well, saints and stars, it was him.
Spencer,
Embot said, cutting the line to the other ship.
That voice, it's...
Hesho, I said. He's dead. He vanished during the fight with Braid, I said, when the Kitson ship was blasted open and exposed to vacuum. They assumed he got sucked out, but that was in the middle of a lot of weird things happening with Cytonics, not the least of which had involved the summoning of a Delver into the somewhere.
I feel, Embot said, I feel happy. I never spoke to him directly, but I feel like he was my friend, Spencer.
He was mine, too. Open that comm line again, I said. Hey, Hesho? It's me. It's, Alanique. Well, you know, the person who was pretending to be her. Right, that was all rather complicated.
I know not that name, the voice said. I am the Dark Shadow. He with no past. The nameless warrior cursed to wander eternity without home or ally, always seeking memories he can no longer retain. I am fleeting, but a whisper upon time itself.
He said it all with utter solemnity. Man, I loved that little fox gerbil. You don't remember anything? I asked him.
I have only the instincts of a warrior to guide me, he replied. You will not distract me from my current purpose, adversary. Though you have fought admirably, I will defeat you, then compose poetry for your funeral.
This, isn't to the death, Hesho.
I will defeat you, he said in the exact same tone, and compose poetry for your retirement party.
He must have been isolated during his first days in the belt and lost everything. Now that I knew who it was, I was even more impressed by his flying. Hesho had commanded a ship, and though my memory was admittedly fuzzy, I thought he'd mostly acted as a captain. But he'd also been part of my extensive training sessions. I'd assumed some random crew member had been manning, or fox gerbiling, the controls of their ship. It seemed, however, that the pilot had been Hesho himself. How could I use that knowledge? He might be good at dodging and following flight patterns, but he would have let members of his bridge crew work other system controls. He'd messed up earlier on a light lance pivot. He wouldn't be as good at multitasking as I was. I moved in close to some other asteroids as he tried to come back around to attack me. I kept him busy, weaving and dodging, and got farther and farther ahead of him. Finally, he broke off to pull back. At that moment, I shut down my systems to go for a shield reignition. He, expectedly, did the same. You couldn't run boosters and power up a shield at the same time. The thing was, I was fainting. As soon as he powered down, I spun my ship and slammed on my overburn, ripping across the battlefield toward him. He was too slow to respond, and he barely powered up before I reached him. Instead of shooting him, however, I hit him with my light lance, then leaned hard on the controls, boosting with everything I had. This flipped my ship around, yanking him like a ball on a chain and sending him spinning out through the perimeter of the arena. There, he was shot by at least 10 watching pirate ships from various factions, completely locking up his ship.
Dramatic,
Embot said. Hesho deserves the best, I said to him, even if he doesn't remember. Hang on, before we go celebrate, I need to buzz the Delvers again. Is that smart? Nope, I said, slowing and crossing the arena as if to rejoin the broadsiders, but veering close to a white spot. We can work this out, I sent to the Delvers. You don't have to fight us. Don't listen to Winzik, at the very least. He is evil. Evil is a thing of noises, they sent back, confused by the impressions I'd sent them. You are all evil. Please, I sent. I am trying to understand you. Understand this. Leave. All of you must leave and never return. The impression was filled with malevolence, disgust, and fear? Yes, fear. They hadn't wanted me to feel that part, but I could now pick out more and more that they wanted to hide. The impression faded, and I left the region feeling disappointed. No accommodation. One of us would have to be destroyed. I rejoined the broadsiders, who were gathering together with the other 100-odd ships of the various pirate factions. Peg was already on the comm, broadcasting widely to all of the collected pirates. Ha! She said. So much for your secret weapon, Vlep! He didn't respond. The members of the Cannonade faction were already gathering to withdraw. Whatever Peg's next move, she needed to make it now. Look how strong we've grown, she said, inching her shuttle out of the broadsider line to face all the others. Look at how skilled we've become. How many months has it been since any of us have lost a ship to the superiority?
Vlep lost one a few weeks back, Grim said, his voice a grumble. But my fighters are good enough to avoid it.
Peg inched her shuttle forward a little farther.
The superiority forces at Shorehold are weak, while we have grown stronger and stronger. Now, you see the champion I've brought? She's been training my fighters. She spent her life fighting the superiority.
Wait, a new voice said. Is this true?
It was another rough voice speaking Peg's language. I guessed that was her other son, Sem. It's true, I said. My people have been at war with the superiority for decades, and I know their tactics. I've destroyed dozens of their ships. 87, actually, at last count. If you want to take Shorehold, I can make it happen.
Take Shorehold,
another voice asked, a high-pitched one, but not Vlep's.
Are we really talking about this again?
Embot wrote on my screen that this was the leader of the fifth faction, a female Heklo called Gwarde.
I agree with Gwarde, Peg's first son said. This is an old, irrelevant argument. We decided against this course 2 years ago.
And how much has changed in those years? Peg demanded. Look, you all know that things are strange in the belt these days. You've heard of the creatures with the glowing eyes. You've seen isolated people losing their memories faster and faster. Worse, we're vulnerable. All it will take is for the superiority to decide we're too much of a liability and to double the military presence in here, or triple it. They could wipe us out. But not if we control Shorehold. Not if we're bold enough to strike.
I waited, holding my breath. It was such a good argument. Couldn't they see? This was the time to strike.
I hate it,
Sem finally said.
But she's correct. This is worth discussing. Are you sure we want to take that risk?
Grim said.
Yeah,
said the sixth faction leader, though I only knew this because of Embot's notes on my screen.
I don't want to aggravate them. If we lose, it could be catastrophic.
Doing nothing is worse, Ido, Peg said. It is time. Shorehold has an icon and reality ashes. We can use those to keep our memories. We can control this entire region, and we can be safe.
I can't believe I'm saying this, Grim said. but I think she might be right. It is time. If you strike at Shorehold, Mother, Sem said, the Red Sails will join you. So will the Jolly Rogers, Grim said.
I guess, Gward said. Well, I guess we will too. Shore could use some reality ashes over here. We'll split the spoils equally, right?
Equally, Peg said. I promise it.
Well, we're not interested in this insanity, Vlep of the Cannonade faction said. Nearby, one of his repair tugs had finished getting Hesho's vessel online, and it began moving under its own power again.
Hey, Peg said. We won that ship. Leave it.
Grim can keep his ship, Vlep said. We won that earlier. But if we keep ours, he can keep his. Deal? None of you can fly this thing anyway.
Deal, I suppose, Grim said with a sigh. Mother?
Fine, Vlep, Peg said. But why not join us? We...
But before she could finish her speech, the entire Cannonade faction overburned away.
Scud. I had Embot open a line to Hesho, but he didn't accept it.
Should we go after them?
Sem asked.
Rotting scum, Grim said.
Let them go,
Peg said.
We don't need them.
What about you, Ido? You with us?
Let me ask the others,
the final faction leader said. He left the group comm and returned in a few minutes.
We'll do it. But, you're sure we can win? Like, really sure?
You saw my champion fight, Peg said. Trust me, we've got this for certain.
They made plans then, setting up a time for the assault. I sat back, listening to the details with half an ear. The extent of Peg's plan was becoming clear to me, and honestly, I was impressed. I didn't get a chance to confirm my suspicions until a half hour later, when we were flying with the broadsiders back toward our base. Peg opened a direct line to me.
So, she said, you had some questions.
I think I've figured it out, I said. You and your sons never actually had a falling out, did you? You three realized that the pirates were too timid, too untested to go up against the superiority. You faked a schism. That let you control how your coalition fractured. You continued to pretend to be antagonistic to one another so that when the time was right, Grim and Sem could agree with you. And it would seem like they were authentically persuaded. Who else could continue to doubt the attack was a good idea if those two, who hated you, were willing to go along with it?
Smart, Peg said. Words. I hope it's not so obvious to everyone else.
What happened with the champion? I asked. Why swap out to someone else at the last minute?
That wasn't supposed to happen, Peg explained. Grim called me in a panic earlier today. He'd agreed to a quick duel to warm up. He assumed Vlep could never recruit someone good enough to beat him.
Ah, I said. Then he lost.
Fool boy. Almost ruined 2 years of work. We needed a victory like this to galvanize everyone. They're far more skilled than they think. 2 years of sparring will do that.
You set all of this up on purpose, I said. The factions, the raids, the honorable-ish way of fighting. It was all to train the pirates without them realizing they were being trained. You wanted a low-stakes way to prepare them for the assault on Shorehold.
I set them to recruiting, too, she explained, among the people tossed in here. Grew our numbers pretty well. That, and I led some tactical raids against the superiority to test their defenses and steal ships. Every time my faction or one of the boys' factions got too many ships, we lost a few to the others to keep them strong and training.
Genius. Scud, I wished we had Peg in the DDF.
Still hoped I'd be able to get Vlep's group, Peg continued. He's been a weed in my garden for far too long. We should be able to do our assault with 5 factions, I hope. Either way, you did your part.
My part won't be done until we stomp the superiority, I said. And I get to visit the portal in Shorehold. You set the assault for 3 days away. Why wait so long? We should move now.
No need to grow umalitas, kid, Peg said. The other factions need time to prepare, and we just won a major victory. Tonight, we party.
Chapter 30. And then, I said, creeping through the circle of chairs, the evil member of Lion Clan grinned a terrible grin.
No, Simba, he said. It was not mere chance that your father fell to his fate, but it was I who cast him to it. I killed him so that I might have his throne, just as I will now kill you.
The crowd of broadsiders gasped. To enhance the experience, I did Grangran's pantomimes, clawing at the air like a lion. I prowled back and forth before the audience. Maxime had turned on his starfighter's floodlights, but narrowed and lowered the beams so they illuminated only me. We'd closed the blinds to create a dark atmosphere.
Well, I said, Simba was so horrified by this revelation that he let his uncle advance, forcing him back, back, back to the very edge of the tower of the fortress. He had forgotten his training from the knights Timba and Pumon. In a moment, he remembered their long sparring sessions, where he had been forced off the log and made to eat bugs as punishment.
Remember, Pumon's wise voice said in his mind, never put your rear toward an enemy, and never let them control your footing in a duel.
Wise Pumon, the stout knight, now bravely fought the endless hyena clan hordes upon the wall below.
Simba stood his ground, perched atop the tip of the tower known as the Rock of Pride Fortress.
You fool, uncle, Simba growled. For though you presumed to cast me to my death like you did my father, in reality, you have ceded to me the high ground, granting me the upper hand in our duel.
Scar shouted and lashed out, but Simba's training as an outcast among the knights of the Lost Savannah served him well. His ghostly father appeared behind him, glowing like a halo of light.
Mighty was the clash.
Perched as they were, the entirety of the kingdom could see them atop the fortification. But Scar was an assassin, no trained knight, and his subtle ways could not uphold him in the full light of day and truth.
Channeling the no fear of reprisal technique taught to him by the lanky Timba, the bold prince grabbed his uncle by the neck and threw him to the side.
The elder of Lion Clan, unable to maintain his footing, slipped and fell over the edge of the rock, barely holding on by the tips of his fingers. I paused for effect, like Grangran always had, giving them time to imagine the bold warrior prince atop the tower, at last victorious after his long exile. My audience leaned forward, eager for the next words.
Simba stood tall, I said.
The fighting of the armies below ceased as eyes turned toward the two monarchs.
Now, Simba proclaimed, you will announce your betrayal of my father to all, that they may know your treachery.
I admit it, nephew, Scar shouted. I betrayed your father. The hyenas forced me to do so. I was but a pawn. Please let me live.
Now, down below, the frenzied queen of the hyena clan warriors paused in her duel with Nala, mistress at arms. Among barbarian culture, you must never beg for your life. Upon seeing the cowardly act from Scar, Hyena Clan turned their weapons away as one from the lions, refusing the fight. Simba looked down upon his uncle, the author of so much pain and suffering.
I cannot forgive you, uncle, he declared, for the gods themselves demand justice.
And so, as rightful king, I now declare your sentence to be death. And then, with a mighty roar, Simba cast his uncle to his doom. Now, his father's wandering soul could finally rest. Revenge had been exacted, and balance had returned to the land. The circle was at long last complete. There was some romance stuff after that, which I didn't mind so much now as I had when younger, but this had always felt like a better ending to me. It was a story about barbarians and knights, after all. It was strange to me how well I remembered the story, all of the stories, actually. Other things about my past were fading, but the stories remained perfectly cemented in my mind, like an anchor in my past, tied to my soul. The conclusion brought cheers from the other pilots, and Naluba, ever quietly going about making life easier for everyone else, opened the blinds to better light the hangar. We'd all gathered to feast our victory, and I had offered a story. I hadn't realized how well it would be received. They're eager for reminders of the world outside, I thought, watching the pirates chat, even if they come from a different culture. Others wandered toward the tables, where we'd set out various foods that had been found on salvage runs or raids. We didn't need food anymore, but Maxime said there was something about the act of tasting that helped restore memories. I spotted the other human chatting with Rayzed, a young female Tanyuzadran from one of the other flights, whose species looked kind of like red pandas. She was nibbling at the food on a little plate. I felt like I should recognize the varieties, but that part of my memory had well and truly faded. There was a red bit of food and some little yellow bits of something. Chet wandered over to me, his arm still in its sling.
"Spencer," he said, "that story was fantastic. I feel as if I once knew it. At least parts are familiar to me."
Gran-Gran loved it because it spoke of a warrior in exile, I said. She taught me that although my people had been exiled, we could remain strong.
"Your performance at the duel today was inspiring," he said. "You are truly as skilled as your earlier boasts implied. And these, they are a good family to you."
He nodded toward the gathered pirates, but I sensed a certain melancholy to his tone. "What's wrong?" I asked.
"Merely an old man's foolishness," he said to me. "I fear I am not of much use to pilots. What need have these for an explorer who cannot fly?"
"I have need of you," I said. "You led me to those ruins, and you knew that the next stop was in Shorehold. And besides, there's your hunt." Chet had been quietly going among the pirates, asking carefully about icons and reality ashes. I'd finally asked Peg about my icon, and she had been surprised, claiming that none of her people had seen it. I didn't know that she would lie to me, but Chet and I had decided it would be good for him to investigate a little on his own.
"You've been great at this part," I whispered to him, "far better than I'd be. People genuinely like you, Chet. They talk to you."
"If that were true," he said, "and if I were as good at this quest as you indicate, I'd have located the missing item by now."
He shook his head, then glanced at me and raised his good hand.
"No need to bolster my ego further. It is taking on a little water, but not sinking. I fear we stay here too long. I fear being in one place."
"We'll move soon enough," I said.
"And the Delvers?"
he asked.
"Did you feel them earlier today in the duel?"
"Yeah," I admitted.
"If they have located us and decide to move against us,
we'll be gone in a few days," I repeated. "Don't worry. Relax, let your arm heal. We'll be at Shorehold before you know it."
"Yes," he said, then nodded. "Yes, of course. Thank you, Spencer. I believe I needed to hear that."
He smiled toward Maxime as the bearded young man wandered over carrying a plate of food.
"That was a great story spin," Maxime said. "I like the parts about honor. When I was young, I believed that all humankind was these rampaging monsters. I always wondered when that would manifest in me, when I'd start killing."
He looked down.
"I read some of the records when I was older. We did attack a lot of people. So it's good to hear we had stories of honor as well, even if they're fanciful. I mean, lions couldn't actually talk, could they?"
"I've always interpreted it," I said, "as different clans of samurai who took the names of fearsome beasts in order to intimidate their enemies."
Lions and hyenas? Maxime said. I don't think they had those in Japan, Spin.
I'll admit, my old Earth geography was spotty. Hadn't Gran-Gran said the story was from Denmark? Anyway, Chet was inspecting the bits of food as Maxime offered us the plate. I hesitated. The longer I spent in here, the stranger an activity eating seemed. Had I really done that every day of my life, stuffing things in my mouth? I picked up one of the yellow bits, holding it pinched between my fingers. What is it?
Can said corn, Maxime explained, in English. I do not know the word, Chet said, selecting a piece. It is an alien color for a plant. I believe those on Earth were normally green, were they not? This one isn't, Maxime said. I've been saving it, and a can of this red stuff. The label said beets. Either of you remember anything about them?
Nope, I said, turning the little corn chunk in my fingers. Beets is a cool name, though. Isn't it strange that we used to consume piles of this stuff every day?
Yeah, Maxime said. The names and the mouth smell? The way your mouth distinguishes foods, that stuff? All gone. Can't remember for the life of me. I swear, I used to like some of this stuff and hate some of it. I am fortunate to have lost that part of my memory entirely, Chet said. I don't recall ever eating, and I'm happy for it. Mashing such things up inside your mouth. It would stick to your teeth and tongue. Then you swallow, force it down your throat in wet clumps held together by saliva. No, I shall pass, my friends.
He set the corn on the plate. I understood the sentiment. Thinking about it made my skin crawl. And yet I did recall some latent happiness associated with eating. I put the little bit of corn in my mouth, then winced. It was somehow both slimy and firm at the same time. I mashed it between my teeth a few times and it popped, releasing the most awful texture, like it had been filled with mud. I barely prevented myself from gagging.
Surreal, isn't it?
Maxime ate one of the bits, his eye twitching as he forced himself to swallow it. Swallowing food. How had I never noticed how bizarre that was? Embot was right. Why did we put food where air went? I spat my corn bits into a napkin Maxime handed me. That's disgusting, I said, then wiped off my tongue. That definitely didn't inspire me to remember anything. Still, I forced myself to try the other stuff. It at least appeared to be bleeding, which might have been where the cool name came from. It was even more slimy, but this time I was prepared. I was a warrior descended from warriors. I could eat a beet. It was nauseating. Wait. What was that? I had tried this once in the mess hall at the DDF, where they had odd heritage foods from the gardens. I remembered Ned's face as he laughed. I'd made the very same joke about the name. I remembered Jorgen smiling, FM explaining how much she liked the food, Kimmelin watching and nodding, Arturo lecturing us on how it was grown. A perfect picture in time. All of their faces suddenly clear to me. Scud, I missed them. I needed to get home, to be with them again. More, I needed to protect them, from the Delvers. I'm trying, I thought, and I'm coming. I promise. That was disgusting and wonderful together at once, I said to Maxime and Chet. It's so strange that it is so strange. I only left the somewhere. How long ago had it been? I forcibly brought out the numbers Embot gave me each morning. Just under a month ago.
This place changes you fast, Maxime said, and then makes you feel like you're in limbo.
After trying the beet, he walked back to the table to get some other samples. Chet wandered over to Shiver, who was talking about how odd she found our means of ingesting. So inefficient, in her words. Better to just grow over patches of minerals and use them as you need them. I rested back against the wall and found myself smiling again. I belonged here. Granted, I'd belonged other places too. I could faintly remember similar evenings with my friends at the DDF headquarters. But I also remembered pain, fear, loss, Hurl's death, worry for Jorgen. Here, I didn't have those same fears. And Scud, I had to admit these last few weeks had been invigorating, exciting. First the exploration, then infiltrating pirates, now earning their trust, defeating their champion. This had been thrilling, like a story, like the things I'd always imagined myself doing. As before, while exploring with Chet, I felt a faint sense of guilt to be enjoying myself while my friends back home were in danger. But then again, the real danger was the Delvers, and I was working on that as best I could. And didn't I deserve to rest between fights? Every warrior needed a break, didn't they? A Valhalla, an Elysium. The stories understood. In the greatest of warrior societies, there was a reward for those who spent their days killing. The group began calling for me to tell another story, so I walked back toward the light. I'd offer them three different options, like Gran-Gran had done for me when I was a child. I did love my friends, and I was doing everything I could to help them. So I determined not to feel guilty for finding a place where I could live the life I'd always wanted. I had been exiled. But in that, like Satan from the stories, I had found a place I could make into heaven itself. Right then, the base's scanner's alarm started going crazy. Chapter 31. Imminent collision of this fragment with... Naluba trailed off, glancing up from the scanner data toward all of us, gathered around the machine. With what? Peg demanded. With another fragment, Naluba said. I've never seen anything like it. The fragment is coming in so quickly. Scanner says impact is in only half an hour. I shared a look with Chet, whose expression was grim. Last time, the incoming fragment had completely annihilated the one we were on. Get people to ships and ready to evacuate, Peg announced. Captain, Naluba said. We have 5 ships down for maintenance to prepare for the assault. We can get them up and flying, but in a half hour? Plus, if we abandon the base, we'll lose equipment, spare parts, diagnostics. Scud. As we'd been getting ready for the party earlier, the ground crews had started their jobs, assuming they'd have 3 days to fine-tune the starfighters for our upcoming assault. Evacuate anyway, Peg said, just in case. Also, Naluba, I said, send the scanner data to my ship. What? Why? Do it, I said, running for Embot, Chet on my heels. I hauled myself up on the wing, then helped Chet with a hand up. Embot popped open the cockpit, and we leaped in as he lit up the ship's dash. I'm getting data direct from the scanner, he said. Oh my, that's bad. Math it, I said. Can we do anything? Calculating. That one coming in is a lot smaller. The broadsiders have access to 6 light lances for maneuvering ships. A bunch of figures popped up on my screen. Done, he said. There's time, barely. We lift the entire fragment that's coming toward us, Chet said, reading the instructions. Bold. And possible, Embot said. Only if you move quickly, Spencer. I mean, I know you really enjoyed the last collision, but... I stood up and shouted toward Peg as she rushed by. I've got another option, Peg. Peg pulled to a stop, looking toward me. Me and 5 other ships pulling with light lances, I said, can move that incoming fragment upward just enough to avoid us. But we have to be quick about it. She didn't miss a beat. She shouted for everyone else to keep evacuating, but organized a small crew to execute Embot's plan. I settled in the cockpit and glanced back at Chet. You'd never encountered this before that first time? Nope, he said, putting on a helmet. And now it's happened to us twice? Yep. You know what I told you earlier? About not being worried that the Delvers might know where we are? Indeed, Pretend I said something intelligent instead.
I shall endeavor to do my best.
In moments, Peg had a crew for me to lead, including herself with her powerful shuttle. Fortunately, these ships already had light lances attached for towing ships that had been locked down by destructor fire. Go to these coordinates on the incoming fragment, I said, and relayed MBOT's instructions and figures to their displays. Attach your light lances to the acclivity stone there, then be ready to lift. Peg prodded everyone along again. They began taking off, but not with nearly the urgency I'd have wanted.
You'd think they'd be more frightened, MBOT said. It's too easy to get comfortable in here, Chet replied, particularly if you stay in one place for long.
I followed the instructions from MBOT, blasting off toward the incoming fragment. I was a faster ship, so I took up position at the rear of the fragment where he directed me. This one, like the one before, was barren, just a solid block of stone. Small, dense, and most importantly, fast, like a bullet. I matched speeds with the fragment and launched my light lance out to connect to the stone. The other ships started following suit one by one as they arrived.
Under 15 minutes until contact, Chet noted, watching the clock